Good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yeshua, our Messiah. The name of this broadcast is Cross the Border, and I'm Nicholas. Today we're going to pick up once again our series that we're calling Minor Prophets for Interesting Times, and you can find that series that we began, actually many years ago, but are continuing today as we continue to go through the Minor Prophets. You can find that on my website at crosstheborder.org. Just put Minor Prophets in the search box in the header there, and that series should come up. We're going to add today to that series from the book of Habakkuk. Let's start with a little background information on the book of Habakkuk to get us, historically grounded in the context of what is being written there. Let's see what information we have. The prophet Habakkuk is generally believed to have written his book in the mid to late 7th century BC, not long before the Babylonian siege and capture of Jerusalem. Habakkuk identifies himself as a prophet in the opening verse. Due to the liturgical nature of the book of Habakkuk, there have been some scholars who think that the author may have been a temple prophet. Temple prophets are described in 1 Chronicles 25:1 as using lyres, harps, and cymbals. Some feel that this is echoed in Habakkuk 3:19, and that Habakkuk may have been a Levite and a singer in the temple. There's no biographical information on the prophet Habakkuk. In fact, less is known about him than any other writer of the Bible. The only canonical information that exists, that means in the Bible itself, comes from the book that is named for him. His name comes either from, and we're going to skip that, although his name does not appear in any other part of the Jewish Bible, rabbinic tradition, that means take this with a grain of salt, holds that Habakkuk may be the Shunammite woman's son who was restored to life by Elisha at 2 Kings 4:16. The prophet Habakkuk is also mentioned in the narrative of Bel and the Dragon, part of the deuterocanonical additions to Daniel in a late section of that book. In the superscription of the Old Greek version, Habakkuk is called the son of Joshua of the tribe of Levi. In this book, Habakkuk is lifted by an angel to Babylon to provide Daniel with some food while he's in the lion's den. Like I said, that's according to Jewish tradition, so take that with a grain of salt there. Historical context. It is unknown when Habakkuk lived and preached, but the reference to the rise and advance of the Chaldeans in chapter 1, 6, verses 6 through 11 places him in the middle to the last quarter of the 7th century BC. So Habakkuk virtually dates himself in the book itself. So one possible period might be during the reign of Jehoiakim from 609 to 598 BC. The reasoning for this date is that it is during his reign that the Babylonians were growing in power. The Babylonians marched against Jerusalem in 598. Jehoiakim died while the Babylonians were marching towards Jerusalem, and Jehoiakim's 18-year-old son, Jehoiachin, assume the throne. Upon the Babylonians' arrival, Jehoiachin and his advisors surrendered Jerusalem after a short time. With the transition of rulers and the young age of and inexperience of Jehoiachin, they were not able to stand against the Chaldean forces. There is a sense of intimate knowledge of the Babylonian brutality in chapters 1, verses 12 through 17. Okay, with that little overview, let's pick up with and jump into Habakkuk, chapter 1 and verse 1. Habakkuk, chapter 1, verse 1. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? even cry unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save? Why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth, for the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. It's going to jump into Matthew Henry's commentary just to open up the book and give us a sense of what's going on. And, you know, what do we have to learn from Habakkuk, and how do we relate that to today? Minor prophets for interesting times. And these are interesting times that we live in right now. And I believe that we can relate them to the time and the demise of Israel in its day, because even Habakkuk here, as many of the other prophets, are reporting the same things that we're seeing in our, well, post-Christian influenced society. God's people are still here, and the remnant has always been here. Of course, the visible church has always been here and been very large. Even in Israel in its day, the remnant was there. The influence of the remnant begins strong because people are brought out of captivity, like the Jews were brought out of, or they come through some trials and tribulations, and everybody turns back to doing what's good and following the law of God. And so we see that the same influence rise in Israel, and then we see it demise in Israel about the time that the Babylonians come in to execute judgment at the word of the Lord. So we see that we're in the same demise here. The influence of God's law is waning in our society, and the report is the same. And so let's see what Matthew Henry has to say about that report. Maybe we can see it a little more clearly and make those parallels. We are told no more in the title of this book, which we have, Habakkuk 1:1, that the penman was a prophet, a man divinely inspired and commissioned, which is enough. If that be so, we need not ask concerning his tribe or family, or the place of his birth. And that the book itself is the burden which he saw. He was as sure of the truth of it as if he had seen it with his bodily eyes already accomplished. Here in these verses, the prophet sadly laments the iniquity of the times, as one sensibly touched with grief for the lamentable decay of religion and righteousness. It is a very melancholy complaint which he here makes to God. One, that no man could call what he had his own, but, in defiance of the most sacred laws of property and equity, he that had power on his side had what he had a mind to, though he had no right on his side. The land was full of violence, as the old world was. The prophet cries out of violence, iniquity and grievance, spoil and violence, in families and among relations, in neighborhoods and among friends, in commerce and in courts of law. Everything was carried with a high hand, and no man made any scruple of doing wrong to his neighbor, so that he could but make a good hand of it for himself. It does not appear that the prophet himself had any great wrong done him. In losing time, it fared best with those that had nothing to lose. But it grieved him to see other people wronged, and he could not but mingle his tears with those of the oppressed. Note, doing wrong to harmless people, as it is an iniquity in itself, so it is a great grievance to all that are concerned for God's Jerusalem, who sigh and cry for abominations of this kind. He complains that the wicked doth compass about the righteous. One honest man, one honest cause, shall have enemies besetting it on every side, many wicked men in confederacy against it. Run it down, nay, one wicked man for it is singular, with so many various arts of mischief sets upon a righteous man, that he perfectly besets him. That the kingdom was broken into parties and factions that were continually biting and devouring one another. This is a lamentation to all the sons of peace. There are that raise up strife and contention, that foment divisions, widen breaches, incense men against one another, and sow discord among the brethren, by doing the work of him that is the accuser of the brethren. Strife and contentions that have been laid asleep and begun to be forgotten, they awake and industriously raise up again and blow up the sparks that were hidden under the embers. And if blessed are the peacemakers, cursed are the peace breakers that make parties and so make mischief that spreads further and lasts longer than they can imagine. It is sad to see bad men warming their hands at those flames which are devouring all that is good in a nation, and stirring up the fire too. 3. That the torrent of violence and strife ran so strongly as to bid defiance to the restraints and regulations of laws and the administration of justice. Because God did not appear against them, nobody else would. Therefore, the law is slacked, is silent. It breathes not. Its pulse beats not. So it is said, the word signifies, it intermits, and judgment does not go forth as it should. No cognizance is taken of those crimes. No justice done upon the criminals. Nay, wrong judgment proceeds. If appeals be made to the courts of equity, the righteous shall be condemned and the wicked justified, so that the remedy proves the worst disease. The legislative power takes no care to supply the deficiencies of the law for the obviating of those growing threatening mischiefs. The executive power takes no care to answer the good intentions of the law that are made. The stream of justice is dried up by violence and has not its free course. 4. That all this was open and public and impudently avowed. It was barefaced. The prophet complains that this iniquity was shown him. He beheld it, which way soever he turned his eyes, nor could he look off of it. Spoiling and violence are before me. Note, the abounding of wickedness in a nation is a very great eyesore to good people, and if they did not see it, they could not believe it to be so bad as it is. Solomon often complains of the vexation of this kind which he saw under the sun, and the prophet would therefore gladly turn hermit that he might not see it. But then we must needs go out of the world, which therefore we should long to do, that we may remove to that world where holiness and love reign eternally, and no spoiling and no violence shall be before us. 5. That he complained to this of God, but could not obtain a redress of those grievances. Yahuwah, Lord, he says, why dost thou show me iniquity? Why hast thou cast my lot in a time and place when and where it is to be seen? And why do I continue to sojourn in Meshech and Kedar? I cry to thee of this violence. I cry aloud. I have cried long, but thou wilt not hear. Thou wilt not save. Thou dost not take vengeance on the oppressors, nor do justice to the oppressed, as if thy arm were shortened or thy ear heavy. When God seems to connive at the wickedness of the wicked, nay, to countenance it by suffering them to prosper in their wickedness, it shocks the faith of good men and proves a sore temptation to them. We have cleansed our hearts in vain, and hardens those in their impiety who say, God has forsaken the earth. We must not think it strange if wickedness be suffered to prevail far and prosper long. God has reasons, and we are sure they are good reasons, both for the reprieves of bad men and the rebukes of good men. And therefore, though we plead with him and humbly expostulate concerning his judgments, yet we must say, he is wise and righteous and good in all, and must believe that the day will come, though it may be long deferred, when the cry of sin will be heard against those that do wrong, and the cry of prayer for those that suffer it. And how much personally I can relate with the things stated there in interpretation by our good friend Matthew Henry of the days in which we live, and a very thorough overview of what was happening in Habakkuk's time that led to the judgment that was coming and foretold in this very book. Just look around today at the justice and the law, how the laws have been turned upside down, and everything that evil, you see that evil is rewarded and good is punished. So it was in Habakkuk's time, so it is in our time today. And as this trend grew in Habakkuk's time and led to terrible destruction and desolation of the nation, the city, and the temple that shortly followed Habakkuk's prophecy here, so we can expect the same thing to happen in the days that we live. No nation is exempt from God's judgment. Now, we are not the nation Israel, but we are America. The Bible already foretells the history of the world from the time that John wrote the Revelation to the consummation or the return of Christ and beyond. So we need but open the pages of the book of Revelation for the details of what we will see in our days. But judgment will come. We may not be taken captive and carried off to the land of the Chaldeans, as was Israel in that day, but many people are already taken captive right in their own homes, and the captivity of sin has its hold in every place. Men are not free anymore by this very same violence that Habakkuk cries about, that he sees before his face every day. I see before my face every day in the land of America. People don't see it because they don't want to see it, because they don't understand what it means. Violence is force. And force is the threat of violence. And many people today, almost everyone I know, lives under the threat of violence, to violate God's law or to go along with it. The socialism of today is the threat of violence. It is force. They rob one man to enrich themselves. And as Jesus said, they call themselves benefactors while they are doing it. But they are not benefactors, because they benefit even greater than those that they pretend to be benefactors to. So we see the violence of force in action in our day. Let's continue and jump back in here to Habakkuk verse 5. Behold, ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days, which ye will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of your land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses are also swifter than the leopards, and are more fierce than evening wolves, and their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from afar. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. And they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing his power unto his God. And so Habakkuk utters the judgment of God to Israel. And of course, we know that the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, came in and they did take captive Israel. And many, like Daniel and his fellows, were taken captivity in the first captivity when Babylon came in. Of course, Israel, being too weak to stand up against the Babylonians, they acceded to the Babylonian power. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar set the king of set the king of Israel as his superintendent. And we know how the story went after that, that Israel finally rebelled and Babylon desolated the nation, the city, and the temple in the long run. Well, let's take a break. You're listening to Cross the Border. My name's Nicholas. We're going through the book of Habakkuk, continuing our series, The Minor Prophets for Interesting Times. We'll be back in a few minutes and continue.